This is an interview with Simon Pipe about the Banbury Hobby Horse, recorded by Ian Morris.
I'm with Simon in his house in Stratford. Could I just ask you to say who you are, please?
My name is Simon Pipe, and I am a Morris dancer of some ill repute, and was also the founder and briefly the organiser of Banbury Hobby Horse Festival, which was a celebration of horses and other animals with the wrong number of legs.
That's absolutely marvellous. My name is Ian Morris, and we'll be interviewing for about an hour. Simon, could I just ask you about your background?
Yes, my parents were not involved in folk traditions or customs at all. I had a feeling that my paternal grandfather, who was actually an architect in London, whose name is on a city firm still, that he had some connection. He owned a Thames sailing barge, and he had a skipper, Jim Lawrence, who may have been a step dancer, but I don't know. I have actually seen Jim's name come up on folk discussions, so I wished I'd had the wit to actually pursue that, because he probably would have remembered the sort of three-year-old running around the deck of the barge. My grandfather used to allow his boat to be used for the regatta at Maldon, which would include the greasy pole, where a spar would be projected out from the side of the barge with a flag at the end. And we've got a picture somewhere of a fit young man. You know, you try and walk along this greasy pole, but it can't be done. And so there was an awareness, and he took me beagling once, which as a vegetarian, I definitely wouldn't do now. But there's an awareness of tradition. He took me out into the countryside. He lived in the countryside, and it was just a feeling. It was a feeling, but no actual tangible connection. And then for some reason, round about the sixth form at school, there was a Morris dancer on the staff. And I painted some murals in it was a comprehensive school with a boarding section. And I painted some murals. And for some reason, I painted a picture of a Morris dancer without really knowing what one looked like. And there was another member of staff who became a housemaster for a year, a house tutor, I can't remember what they're called. And there were four of us in the upper sixth form, and he took the other three Morris dancing, but it wouldn't take me. And I'm the one who became actually a champion Morris dancer, and the others didn't do it. I'm not interested in the beer side of it, but I was, but I'm not now. So I don't know why I said that. So I was drawn to this sense of tradition. I became a journalist. I did badly in school, and because I'm neurodivergent, but that wasn't known about. I have got a difficult background educationally, and which I'm very happy to talk about. And I didn't go. I'm clever enough to go to university, but didn't go, and became a journalist. And journalism and folk tradition, that's not really a very good mix. You know, they're alien worlds. But I saw some Morris dancing, the Frome Valley Morris men in Dorset. They came to the pub in Upway in Dorset, where I was living at the time, the Ship Inn, and they danced, and that was okay. But then they came inside and they sang. And the sound of the singing, in the men in harmony, well, actually not in harmony, but singing some songs that were evidently old and with gusto, I thought this was absolutely brilliant. That was what drew me into the Morris, not the dancing, but I became a champion dancer.
So if the music drew you in, where did you then go musically that took you into Morris?
Oh, the music drew me in, but it didn't, I would sing along, but I never learned to play an instrument except the English pipe and tabor. But most people would prefer that I didn't play that, and I am slightly deaf in one ear from it. So I don't play that, but I got into circus skills, and the pipe and tabor is interesting because it's you're playing a pipe and beating a drum at the same time, and I can do it while I'm walking on a slack rope or riding a unicycle, and so I thought it had potential, but I've never used it. I joined the team I was a journalist. I was working on this funny little paper in Dorchester that didn't last long, and the Morris team wrote and said, would you do a feature on us? It was about October, November. And so I was sent along, and the piece was, where do Morris men go in winter? I'd forgotten about this, and I went to the practice. And I enjoyed it. It was in a village hall. I've been to thousands of village halls in the 42 years since. And I think village halls are wonderful places. They have an atmosphere. And then they went to the pub afterwards and they sang. And so I became a dancer. And before the end of the first season, I joined a second team called Great Western Morris, who really were top of the tree in those days. A lot of young men. Meaning under 30, very virile, jumping high in the air, fabulous kit. And I got really caught up in it, as a lot of people do. A lot of people get completely takes over aspects of their life, you know, every apart from work and so on. And I just got very, very keen on it. And in that first season, someone said, you ought to learn a jig, which is where one or two people dance together. It kind of competitive, unless it's one, because you can't compete with yourself. And so I learned a jig in my first year, and that was great. And some, and then I learned another one, Bampton Princess Royal, and I would do the foot up, and my grandmother was alive then. And in the foot up, where you surge forward, I'd give her a kiss and then go off again. And so I was a bit of a showman right from the start, which actually was a bit of a problem, because the Morris is not an individual's tradition, and I am really very definitely individualistic. I'm maverick, and a lot of what followed comes from the fact that I'm maverick, and it's not unrelated to that education thing, because I've got ADHD, I now know. My brain is wired differently, and within the Morris, in history, there have been some characters who don't fit in, and either they disappear or they become famous.
So this was done in Frome?
Frome, in Dorset, actually, Frome Valley, the River Frome in Dorset.
So you're
and then Exeter. I moved to Exeter area for work, so I joined. I kept both teams going. Very different. One flamboyant, one hard working, very hard working. That was really important. This is deadly serious stuff. The other, yeah, we take it seriously. We excel, but we have fun. But they both sang wonderfully, and that's kind of faded out with a lot of teams.
And how did you move from there? Where did you go next?
It was the early 80s, and since the late 1970s, there'd been the Morris has gone through various phases, and the phase it was in at that time was that there was there'd been the Morris Ring, very traditionalist. I've seen somebody say we're reenactors, we're reenacting a tradition, and I am definitely not reenacting it. This is now. And actually, it's not now, because I'm not dancing at the moment. Therefore, it doesn't actually exist. It only exists when you do it. The dance doesn't exist when you're not doing it. And so the movement then was, let's find new things to do. So there was Molly Dancing, a team in Kent called the Seven Champions, formed and stylized this East Anglian tradition that was very obscure at the time. Now there's lots. A team in Shropshire, the Shropshire Bedlams, had revived the border Morris of Worcestershire, Shropshire, Herefordshire, which is much wilder. Cecil Sharp had described it as a degenerate form of Morris and wouldn't have anything to do with it, but it's actually very popular now. And so there was a lot of exploring going on. And then there was people saying, well, the Morris is meant to be athletic, and it isn't. It's all these often old men with tankards on their belts, and it's not athletic at all. So they try to make it athletic, but the trouble is with that, to do it you have to slow it down, and then it becomes a bit boring. So I joined various teams, and because of my journalism career, I moved around a lot. I moved to Cornwall. There was a team there called Trig Morris, still going strong, and their dancing was less athletic. They sang wonderfully, but their interaction with the audience was brilliant, and they had a fool who was brilliant, as did Great Western. And so I was very taken with the idea of being a fool, and that's my big regret, that I haven't yet really succeeded in that. And I got lots of different experiences. There's a team in Gloucestershire. I went and wrote a feature about them for the Western Daily Press, and they invited me to join, and they were the athletic team. But actually, they were past their best. They were about to fade into drunkenness, actually. And I didn't do that. I took the dance more seriously than some of them, but I met one of my musician friends there, Lawrence Wright, who's a brilliant musician, but a maverick. He just doesn't fit. And so I got all of these influences. And then I also went to a circus school. I got into juggling. Great Western used to dance on stilts. So I thought, well, I'll learn to ride a unicycle. And I got a unicycle. I learned it in a weekend. It's like flying, but it doesn't belong in the Morris because it's metal and rubber. You know, it's got where that doesn't fit. So it's, but I was always exploring, and then I learned to juggle, and I got rather obsessive about that and became a five-ball juggler. And then, so there's a lot of juggling stuff in my dance. And then I went to circus school, learned comedy dance, which is in the Morris as well. And from that, the idea of street entertainment and using skills and the fact that musicians work hard, but Morris dancers don't. So what if they did? And so I became really intense about practicing and developing. And in the South Pacific, I lived briefly in the South Pacific on an island where my wife was the doctor, Chatham Island, and another Morris dancer came out. So we went and did a Morris dance tour, two of us, no musician. And I thought, I can form a jig team of two dancers. I'd done a sailor's hornpipe in a music hall show at a folk festival. And so when there was another show at Sidmouth Folk Festival, which is the big one, and they said, we need someone to do this jig in a special show on the main stage. Will you do it, Simon? I'd just won the jig competition. Then there's an annual jig competition. I'd won it for the first time with a dance that, you know, you shouldn't win, but it was good because I could see the potential of it. And I couldn't find another dancer. And then I realised, oh, there's this bloke whose house I can see across the field, because it had to be short. I'm 5'3", and I have red hair, or had. And there was this other, I need someone who's good. Well, that rules out most people. No, good at that, you know, really good. And short, and that rules out nearly everyone. And red hair was a bonus. He did have red hair. So everyone said he was my dad, but actually he wasn't. And so we formed the Outside Capering Crew. And we were experimenting. We were doing the Backer Pipes jig, which is like the Scottish sword dance, but over crossed churchwarden pipes. You know, you tap your toe, shift your weight around the quadrants. And the idea is that you don't touch the pipes. And, well, I do all the time. And we made it from a very staid dance over clay pipe, genuine clay pipes, which are expensive. We used fake pipes and made it exciting, like a bit jazzy, a bit street dance. And that was exciting. And I had this idea of like turning the Morris into street entertainment, which, well, some people say it is, and a show. And I did a broom dance, because broom dancing is, there are various broom dance traditions, but I brought in my circus skills so I could learn to flip the broom up with my feet and spin it along my arm, things that weren't part of the tradition. And I'm quite well known for that. So my neighbours are used to seeing this late middle-aged man go out into the street and play with a broom for an hour, and they just drive past and they don't avert their gaze, you know, sort of, yeah. So, but, you know, I learned that you can balance a broom just with the brush on the floor and just balance it there and it'll stay there. I thought, that's, wow, what can I do with this? And then I just hook my leg up around it and flip it in the air. So it's now the world's shortest dance. I just do it for 8 bars. I balance it. I do a few steps and then I flick it in the air and that's the end of the dance. 8 bars. I could get that down to 4 if I really tried. And so the concept was, a lot of folk dance is involved with objects. So I'd seen Greek dancing with a pint, somebody with a wine glass on their head, and the Basques actually dance on glasses, which is not that hard to do, by the way. I've tried it. Also smashed some glasses. And we built up this idea of this team that would do this. And we found that actually 2 people couldn't sustain a week of folk of this kind of dancing. So eventually we recruited 2 ladies. And we recruited them because the guiding factor was that they had to be not too tall, because it has to look right. And at the time it was, you know, are you a men's team or a women's team? Or this is a bit off, you might be a mixed team, that can't be right. No, there's loads of mixed teams, it's fine. But it didn't occur to us that we were a mixed team. We didn't know. And then when the first time the 2 ladies came to perform, one of them was wearing makeup in team colours. And we thought, oh, the character of the team has changed. So we were just always exploring ideas, and we were being invited to take part in special shows. So for one of these shows, it was supposed to portray the Morris over centuries, and from the, you know, the earliest known forms. So I think for that one, that might be why I had a jester costume made, which turned out to be extremely vulgar. But my mother was watching the only ever performance, and she didn't say, "Well done, Simon." So I think it must have been really vulgar. And but it wasn't meant to be. And we made the Basque dancers in Spain / France have this tradition where they have a number of people dancing in hobby horses. So I thought, oh, we could do a hobby horse dance where the horse actually dances, which normally they don't. They stand there, or maybe they wander around, or maybe they open their mouth a bit. But they don't dance. So in my house, I've still got the frame. I worked out that you could make a very strong frame from two children's hoops, quite strong ones. And Sue in the team, the one with the makeup, she learned how to make webbing so that it would suspend from your belt. So it's made to measure. And then she built papier-mâché horse heads, which could clip on, which were a little bit Walt Disney, unfortunately. They were pretty and they were cute. And that's not me.
Could I bring you just back to, you've done the journalism.
Yeah.
You've done all the groups you've just mentioned.
Yeah.
We haven't arrived at Stratford yet.
Oh, that's, Stratford's a long way in the future.
So basically, how have you got to Stratford, briefly?
Okay, well, journalism, I moved around a lot. My wife's a GP, we went travelling twice, so I've Morris danced in the South Pacific, in New Zealand, in St Helena in the South Atlantic, and in the South Pacific, on Chatham Island, they had a little radio station, 700 population, 500 miles from anywhere, island the size of the Isle of Wight, and it had a radio station with egg cartons on the wall in a room off the ladies' toilet in the village hall. And one day the CD, so the output was the radio engineer who built the studio would go in, do an hour's show, and then put on 6 CDs to set to play 3 times, and that was the output, and the CD player broke down. So I was told to go in and change the CD when I complained about it, and I became a radio presenter, and that got me into the BBC, which is ridiculous. But I had a BBC career, took me to Luton, Milton Keynes, then we went to St Helena for a while because my wife got a job there, and I became a bit of an expert on St Helena, and then, not really, but compared with everyone else. And then came back to the UK, got a job with BBC Radio Oxford, and where nobody wanted to acknowledge that I was a Morris dancer. If it was mentioned on air, it was quickly shut down. And then my oldest child got into a grammar school in Stratford, and the bus journey was too far, so we moved. But while we were in Banbury, I lived in a village called Adderbury, which is one of the traditional Cotswold Morris villages. The Morris dances with the hankies and the bells and the sticks all come from a fairly small area of the South Midlands, and we know which dance comes from which village because they all have their own style. So the tradition was very strong and important there, and I knew I couldn't be a maverick there, but they still treated me with suspicion. They were very nice, they were good friends. And we started the Hobby Horse Festival while I was there, but when I moved to Stratford, I didn't, you know, I lost the link. It's only 15 miles away, but I lost the link.
Could I ask you, what made you get involved and start a festival, or revisit a festival?
It was start, because I worked for BBC Radio Oxford, I could be pretty confident of getting the festival on the radio, and they did interview me once, a number of occasions, and on one of the occasions, it wasn't me, I lined up the Fine Lady of Banbury Cross, because we obviously had a fine lady on a white horse, but it was a hobby horse, and I got the fine lady to do the interview, and it was Sybil Rusko, who was on Radio 1 and is now on Radio 4. And she said, "I'm going to speak to the fine lady now." And then the fine lady came on, and it was very obviously a man. In fact, it was the headmaster of one of the local primary schools. She said, oh, I thought I was going to talk to a man. Whoa. You know. But they interviewed me and they said, and this festival goes back hundreds of years, doesn't it, Simon? And I'm thinking, it's only 3 years ago that I launched it. You know? No, it doesn't. But I had to deflect slightly and say, well, you know, we're actually celebrating a number of ancient traditions, which we were. We had hobby horse traditions from all around England and South Wales, nothing from Scotland and nothing from Ireland. But we did have people come from America and France because they were twin town. And yeah, there's some wonderful traditions. And in fact, some of those traditions I now understand have kind of had a bit of a resurgence as a result of Banbury.
So previously there was no Banbury Hobby Horse Festival?
No.
But?
I can answer the question. I remember the question.
You mentioned obviously the historical thing of Spain and so on.
Yeah.
Horses.
Yeah.
The tradition in this country.
Traditions.
Why did you want to start brand new festival?
There was talk at the time, how can we capitalise, as a town, how could Banbury capitalise on the fame of the Banbury Cross nursery rhyme, ride a cock horse to Banbury Cross to see what Johnny can buy, a penny white horse, a penny white loaf, and a tuppenny apple pie. Well, there's various versions. And I had been to the Jack in the Green Festival in Hastings a number of times as a Morris dancer and had seen how fantastic this was. This traditional, a human being in a cage covered in leaves in May to celebrate the May's long-standing tradition. They revived it. Morris dancers from around the country go and it's a big parade and it stops the street, it stops everything, except for the motorbikers who also have their celebration. And I'd seen this and thought, I really got caught up in the excitement of this outlandish thing, this sense, it's very special, that all of the costume, the very strong, we are on fate, this is our once a year day, that's a folk song I think, but you know, it really, and it's a big deal and then it's gone, the next day it's gone. And there's something in the air when these things happen. And I thought, well, we've got this nursery rhyme and I'm aware of hobby horses because I'm in the Morris and there's hobby horses in the Morris. Actually, not in the 19th century, there weren't. But if you go back to the 16th, there were. And so I thought, well, let's do a hobby horse festival. So I went to the town council who said, I do not know what you're talking about. I cannot understand. What do you mean a head on a stick with a man inside it? But it's not really, it's just, what do you mean a horse with only two legs? I know, we can't picture this. So I got someone who's brilliant with a goat. Actually, it's a goat. And I could pretend to you that there's a man in there, but there isn't. It's a goat in its own right. And yeah, it has only two legs. And it is very, very naughty. And it came and met the town councillors and was very naughty in the town council chamber. And they said, OK, yes, we think we understand now. And I said, the whole point about this, it's, they said, this seems to be completely bonkers. And I said, yes, isn't it good? And they hadn't realised that bonkers is good. But I said, yeah, that is the point. It is bonkers. That's why it's important. That's why it belongs in the English folk tradition, because it's actually slightly mad. Did I say slightly? I might withdraw that. So they went with it, but we also wanted to have a community dimension, because a lot of Morrissey-type festivals, they say, we're going to host the big Morris Festival here. And the Morris dancers come, they do their thing and they go away. And really, it's not a festival in the town. It's all these people from outside who just go to the town and do their own thing and then go away again. So the town council said, this would be great with our existing festival, Town Mayor's Sunday in the People's Park. And we can do hobby horse, we'll have a hobby horse parade. And the second year I said, we should have children's fancy dress in hobby horses and we'll call it fancy dressage. And in fact, the name was the reason to do it. But that was, and we'll have, and they said, oh, this headmaster came up with a rolling a dice game with hobby horses, cock horses, you know, the horse's head on a stick. And they, by the way, they try and come up with nice, polite explanations for the name cock horse, but actually it's rude. Of course it is. And because English people didn't care about that sort of thing. And I had seen on St. Helena boat races 1,000 feet up from, you know, they're surrounded by water, but they do their boat racing on land. And it's eight people straddling a pole and running backwards while the cox hangs onto the pole and tries desperately to steer them. A brilliant race. So I thought, we'll do giant cock horse races, four adults on giant cock horses. And the local college special needs department made these beautiful horses with modroc, it's called. It's like papier-mâché plaster. And they decorated them in what they thought was right. And even though it wasn't what I would have done as a folkie, it was brilliant because it was what they decided was right. And unfortunately, they were quite heavy and they were difficult to store. So the town council got some new ones made, which were just bits of cardboard with horse's head. And the thing about a thin piece of cardboard and then a handle, four handles for people to hang on to, and the handles were badly positioned. So a gentleman at the front was likely to get very badly hurt because of where the head was positioned. But they weren't too worried about health and safety because, hey, this is English traditions. We don't worry about health and safety.
Can I ask you when exactly this, when it started?
It started in the year 2000, so made the pitch in 1999. Happened to be the year the shopping centre in Banbury, Castle Quay, was going to open. So there was a little money around, but there was also concern that the shopping centre would suck life away from the area around Banbury Cross and the old streets, Parsons Streets, which had a very rude name in once, and the High Street. And so they wanted something that would focus in on the Banbury Cross. And interestingly, as a result of working on the festival, and we worked with Banbury and Bloom, a guy called Tony McGeehan was running Banbury and Bloom, worked for the council. He was very enthusiastic, gave me a couple of £1,000, and he said, let's have cock horses, floral cock horses for Banbury and Bloom at the base of Banbury Cross. And every year now there are floral cock horses at the base of Banbury Cross. And for Jubilee year or the coronation, they had crowns. So every year they, you know, there's some different feature, but they're still there. So even though the festival's stopped, the cock horses are still at Banbury Cross. And as part of the research that Tony and I did, we discovered that Banbury Cross is in the wrong place. The one we've got now is a Victorian confection, very nice. It looks like an Eleanor cross, but isn't. And somebody from the University of Southampton in the 1960s did a research paper, looked at all of the clues, you know, the description of buildings, and worked out that it must have been at the bottom of Parsons Street at the top of the marketplace, which would make sense because it was a market cross, eight broad steps laid out in a square. And so we got a plaque made and put in the ground. And then a couple of years later, they said, well, we actually want to redo this area. So now there's a whole fancy brickwork artwork on the ground marking the site of the original Banbury Cross as a result of the festival.
So you've managed to achieve bringing a festival to Banbury, achieve something that hadn't been done, which was to move
knowledge of the cross. And that got on the radio because I did a story of saying Banbury Cross is in the wrong place. For years they've been thinking it's here and actually it's there. Oh, and also there's a plaque on Banbury Cross, and I looked at it and thought it said this replaces the original cross, was destroyed on the 2nd of July 1600, and I thought, no, it wasn't the 2nd of July, it was the 1st. So the date was wrong. And I got interviewed by someone in Australia and someone in Canada about that, or the mayor did, one of us, she did, the mayor got interviewed.
So what's the current situation in Banbury? Not the festival, because we'll come back to that and your involvement, but what's actually happening in Banbury regarding the hobby horses now?
We got four horses that were being thrown out by Eton School, Eton College. They'd had them for a play, school play, and they found out about us and said, would you like them? So we got them, and they are sitting in someone's attic. I made some hobby horses. I got a hobby horse made when I returned to St. Helena, and it had the frame for another one, and that's sitting in someone's shed. That one still comes out. the Eton horses, as we call them, are in the shed. One or two of my other horses are in the shed, and it's not happening in Banbury, but the Adderbury Village Morris men, they got involved in the festival and they did make a new horse. They'd lost interest in their hobby horse, and which is named after someone from most of the Village Morris team were wiped out in the First World War. One person came back, Charlie, and that's the name of their horse. So they now always often go out with their hobby horse. So they've revived that. Some people made horses, some people got interested in horses. I learned today that the artist who made the Fine Lady hobby horse for us, which had to be ridden by a very tall man because he made it so big, he just mentioned it to us. By the way, we need a man to ride this. And he then went on and as an artist working with communities in the folk sphere, he started working out ways to make hobby horses with children and community groups. And he started the hobby horse trials at Sidmouth Folk Festival, which turns out to be a really popular free event on the seafront. Hobby animals from around the country turn up and compete for this prize, which is given, which is handmade by the director of Chicken Run, the film, director of Aardman Animations, the man who set it up, because he's an ex-Morris dancer and he loves all this stuff. And I didn't win it, which I'm quite... And so that's going... And I checked with Stephen Rowley, who started that, and he said, oh, yeah, it was a direct follow-on from Banbury. And he said also the Hooden Horses of Kent. So these are quite crude stick animals, part of a winter play visitation custom in Kent. There were moves, you know, someone was trying to revive interest in these animals, and he came to the festival. He was a wonderful singer, so he said, you've got to keep coming. And when he couldn't afford it, we brought him, and he brought other people with him the second year, and they went away and built a whole team. And now Broadstairs Folk Festival has this team of six or seven, I don't know how many Hooden Horses they've got, but it is the symbol of the festival. And Steve says that there's a sense that, you know, hobby horses, there's just more awareness and more pride. And the, you know, there's the Mari Lloyd tradition in Wales, which is a winter visitation custom. It's a skull on a stick. The Minehead hobby horse people came up 2 or 3 years. We had the Abbots Bromley Horn Dancers. This is the oldest folk dance in this country. The horns have been dated to about 800 years old. This mystical dance is unlike any other dance, with this strange step. These two families do it every the first Sunday after the first Monday after September the 4th. And you know, they're revered, you know, with the Morris dancers, the Abbots Bromley Horn Dancers, they're in another league, you know, it's mystical almost. But actually they all came and stayed in my house and they danced in my village and I've had a go, you know, it's amazing. They came and far from being aloof, they just loved it, and they went and danced through the clothing fashion shop, New Look, one of those, and got kicked out, I think. But they love being mischievous, because everybody's mischievous.
So the Banbury...
They came anyway, yeah.
So the Banbury event that you started...
Yeah.
...is not so...
It's fizzled. It fizzled, and we decided it was time for it to stop. It wasn't a sustainable event. The idea was, we'll bring all of these outlandish animals... I like to call them horses with the wrong number of legs, but there were goats, dragons, donkey, quite a few others. Unicorns, obviously. Obviously, unicorns do exist. It's just that people make them. And they say, is it a real horse? Yes, of course it is. If it hits you on the head, it will hurt. And getting all of those people to come was really hard work. And I have since learned that some people didn't want to come again because people's... I'm probably revealing a secret here. There's actually a person inside, and they can't always see, and local teenagers would think it was quite funny to kick them, so they didn't want to come again. But that wasn't, for most, that wasn't the case. And but it wasn't sustainable to have to keep inviting all these people and persuading them. And the local events, they were great. I had to drop out after a couple of years because of family illness. And I literally, I phoned up one day and said, I've got to stop. But we were well advanced with planning number three, I think. And the person who took over did a wonderful job keeping it going for another 15 years or so. But they weren't as interested in the slog. They had other things going on, because all of these things depend on somebody being interested enough to do it. And it takes over your life, and it, in a way that's not very healthy.
So it had its natural time.
Yeah, and it when towards lockdown time, the town mayor's Sunday stopped. Banbury Folk Festival had started up, and they said, we'll take it over. So it moved from June. Coincidentally, by the way, the first one was in the month of the 400th anniversary of the destruction of Banbury Cross by the Puritans. Banbury was a far gone Puritan. And so it became part of the folk festival, and they did a wonderful job with a procession and bringing in Morris teams and so on, which we tried to avoid because Morris dancers dominate everything. I am a Morris dancer. I love Morris, but this was not a Morris festival. We had Morris horses, but we also had lots of things that were nothing to do with Morris. But they did a brilliant job, and they, you know, suddenly we had a band to lead the procession, and people were getting tickets to a festival, so there was an incentive to come. But then they stopped organising the festival. The town mayor's Sunday had stopped, and yes, it naturally died.
So having finished,
I was quite glad it naturally died.
What's happened to all the costumes?
Well, I lent for the last one. I couldn't go. And so I lent the outside capering crew. My Morris team was called the outside capering crew, and we decided to make four hobby horses for this dance I mentioned, and which was very flamboyant, but some people thought it was a bit naff. And I lent my horse, and I hope it still exists. I've got the frame, but the head, I lent the head because it could be used as a pole animal as well. And I had two cock horses that I'd made. I was very proud of. Someone said, yeah, they're just socks on a stick. Yes, that's that point. They're just socks on a stick. Isn't it brilliant? With a couple of ping pong balls for eyes held in place by a treasury tag and a couple of ribbons. And actually there was a clacky thing, a castanet children's toy. So actually this cock horse, which is a sock on a stick, can actually make a clip-clop noise if you shake it. They're in a shed. And the St. Helena horse, called Fenny Grub, because it was made for me by a man whose nickname was Fenny Grub, that's in the shed. And I am glad to discover, as a result of being asked to do this oral history interview, that they do still exist, because I'd kind of forgotten about them.
So would I be right in thinking that the horse comes to life for you?
Yes. So I have now, one of the legacies of the festival is that I... This prompted a surge of creativity for me and other people. So the fancy dress, an example of the creativity, is some children turned up with horses made out of cardboard boxes that had been cut in half, turned upside down, and a cardboard head stuck on, and you paint it, and little straps. And I thought, this is wonderful. So that became a category in the fancy dressage competition. A new invention. And that was the kind of creativity. And for me, I thought, I could have a horse that's got four legs. Why have they always got two legs? If you had four legs, you could walk around and do things. So I made this horse, which my Morris team used to call Boxer, because that's the horse that gets sent away to the glue factory and Animal Farm. But then, because that joke was too subtle, they called it Bostick, to say, really, we just want to send it to be made into glue. I am vegetarian. But actually, because our team is called the Outside Capering Crew, because we caper, which is the Morris step mentioned in Shakespeare, I wanted it to have a name that had caper in it. So it's a misspelling of Copernicus. It's Copernicus, but actually it's Capernicus. And so they quite liked Capernicus, so Copernicus, Capernicus. I drew in my mad book, this four-legged horse, and then I made it, and I told my mother, I told my mother that when I die, my only, you know, apart from raising reasonably sane children, is that my only contribution to humanity is that I wrote some Morris dances that are quite good, but I was at the BBC, I've done some things, my proudest achievement is creating this horse. But I didn't invent it, it happened. And when people see it, they say, what a nice aardvark. Because the thing is, I've never seen the horse, and I thought it looked like a horse, but I don't know, I've never seen it.
So this comes at a perfect moment, because you were kind enough to put it on when I arrived.
What do you mean, put it on?
You became...
Yes, the horse appeared. I disappeared and the horse appeared. Absolutely. I disappeared into a tent and the horse came out of the tent. As far as anybody need know, I was still in the tent.
How wonderful. May I now... Can we describe what the horse looks like by looking at some of the things that we've got round the room now?
Yes.
Would that be okay?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. So if we move over to where you've put some of the things, if we start here, we have...
Okay, when I briefly had an unsuccessful career as a university teacher of journalism, and we would do this introductory thing with the students where we had to say something that might be true, two things that were true and one false thing, and I said I had an artificial leg. And apparently they spent the rest of the session looking at my trousers, trying to work out which one had an artificial leg. But actually, I've got two artificial legs, and they are currently standing up on their own in my living room with a pair of trousers draped over the top of them and shoes sticking out. They are freestanding legs, in fact, with no body. And I shove my... The trousers have a little strap which I hang over my neck, and I reach my arms into the trousers, and there's something in there that enables them to become my front legs. And the important thing is, they're actually attached to shoes inside some trousers, attached to a juggling club in each case. And so they have to be strapped on, and the shoelaces aren't visible. So the back legs of the horse are actually my legs, and I have to make sure that I tie up my shoelaces so that the laces tie around my legs, not in the normal way, so you can't tell which legs are which, because at certain times in the performance you can't tell which legs are real. And some people think they're all real, by the way, which is quite funny, because nobody's that small, and because I'm bending over double, and I can't see. The horse is not blind in that, you know, the story is that the horse can see, but actually I got its eyes in a joke shop, so obviously it can't see. And there's a little slit in the neck, so I can only see the ground, I can only see my feet. And sometimes I look at the four legs and I don't know which ones are mine. If I want to move them, but, you know, get it right, I'm not actually sure which legs are the ones that I'm looking at, the ones I feel. And by the way, that thing about not being able to see once, my Morris team thought it would be quite funny to just leave me in the street in Banbury, and I managed to find my way back to the town hall by following the double yellow lines. And until I would, because you can't, all right, I am inside it, you can't get out of it when in public, you have to hide. And I can only see the ground. So that's freestanding. And I have two pairs of trousers that I've had for 30 years, from Marks and Spencer, white jeans. You can't buy white jeans very easily, so they've had to last for 30 years nearly. And so it's very important that I wear the same shoes front and back. They're quite cheap. And same trousers, and I tie the laces so they're out of sight. And I also have the head is a camping mat. It's a foam camping mat. For the Hobby Horse Festival, I learned that you can make a paper cock horse just cutting out this shape, and so I cut the foam out in the same shape, and initially I glued, we got one in against the side of my room, it's got an old sheet taped onto the camping mat, cut to shape so that the head kind of droops over the neck, and the person's head goes inside the neck, and it's held together with white duct tape and with some ribbon sewn on it and a joke shop eyes. And my daughter wore that and has refused to wear it since. But then I learned that you can actually, if you use the whole camping mat and put a cushion on the back, it's better. So, and then I was asked to do it in the village pantomime, and I needed a better costume, and someone gave me a proper actual horse blanket from like a miniature pony. So I've got a real horse blanket on there, and the head sticks that is sewn on, the head is sewn onto the horse blanket, or the other way around, and the ribbons come out. And also we've made it so that the neck is, what do you call it, articulated, reticulated, whatever, so that it wrinkles, but the head dangles to one side a bit, like it's really sad and forlorn, and it flops. And the neck is disproportionately long, and the legs are all close together, so it doesn't look like a horse at all. But I only know that because I've seen pictures of it. I've never seen it. And it is a very, very silly horse, and it'll climb on walls and do all sorts of things.
And the colours and the material that it's made of?
Well, my Morris team, so this was for the Morris team, and I went to a practice and said, I've had this idea for a four-legged horse, and I've got the legs here, and I'll just show you. And they just said, I'd had some good ideas before, so they were going to let this one fizzle out and let me get over it. But we did make them, and so it's in the team colours, which are burgundy-ish, forest green and yellow. Because when we started the team, we went to John Lewis and just picked some ribbons that looked nice, not realising that we'd never be able to get those colours again, because ribbons don't hold their colour when they do a new batch. And so we're stuck with those colours, and but they're just sort of gingham and floppy stuff. Because I like ribbons that flop around, and that's really important. And the thing is, it's really rough. That over there, you've got my fooling costume, which I wore for Adderbury Morris on two or three occasions, and it is just some rough patches of red and blue diamonds sewn onto some old navy surplus white cotton trousers, lovely bum freezer number one uniform, cut off at the knee because they don't fit. And that, for me, I look at the costumes from the old days. I've got a book over there. It was very influential for me. I had this book when I was 20, and I looked at these costumes. And in fact, one of the teams on the front was Adderbury, and I went and danced with them in the end. And the costumes, the colour was really important, but actually there's a certain crudeness to it. And I think in the art world, you call it naive art. And I thought, this has to be naive. So the sock on a stick, it's a sock on a stick, and people say, it's just like, no, this is a living animal. And it's important that it looks, if somebody says it looks rubbish, you could make it, no, you mustn't make it look smart. It's got to look a bit thrown together and not a wonderful piece of craftsmanship.
So you've got four white legs.
I've got four white legs.
We've got the colours that you described.
Yeah.
But we've also got more material over there. Could you just describe that a little bit more?
The black?
Mm.
Well, so this is the horse blanket, and there's a slight problem with it. It's got the CND symbol on the back, but that's just because that's where the seams are. It's not a political horse because it hasn't got a brain. And they're red. But I'm a bit lazy and I don't have any skills. I mean, I'm amazed that I managed to make this horse. It was a revelation to me. Wow, I've actually made something and worked out how to do it and invented it. I've never done that in my life. I'm very good at dancing, but making things, no. I don't know how drills work and things. And so I'm stuck with the fact that it's the wrong colour, but no one's ever said, you know, your horse blanket's in the wrong colour. And the main thing is it's black. And at the moment it doesn't have a tail but it might have a tail. I've got a mop here, and I've discovered that the horse, because it's just a piece of camping foam folded over, there is actually a hole in the front, and so the idea is that you can shove, I want it to swallow a broom, because it would actually be able to swallow the entire broom. But then I thought, well, you could actually get a mop to go through with it, and then you could screw the floppy bit of the mop on the back. You could get a hole where, you know, there needs to be a hole at the back, and put screw the mop on, and then it would become a tail, and then you could spin the handle in the mouth of the horse and the tail would spin round. But I haven't actually managed to do that because that would involve skill.
So do you think that the horse will change in its style and its colours and its materials?
Well, it changed in the materials because as a result of the panto, someone gave me the coat. And I've worked out that actually having two pairs of trousers and having to hook them over my legs is silly. And if I ever do it again, I will make a single suit, like a boiler suit, but with very long arms for the front legs, so that the arms and legs have to look the same. So inside the false trousers, they're real trousers, the false legs, there's more camping foam to make them the right shape. It doesn't really work. But some people, they look at it, this, you know, sometimes there's folds and indents where it wouldn't be possible if it was a real leg, and they still think it's a real leg. And the thing is, sometimes, so the horse has an act, because a lot of these hobby animals don't actually do anything. Some of them are very funny. If they've got a mischievous owner, they come to life. But my horse actually has a show. It has a routine, which involves climbing on a box and raising the front two legs, like a liberty horse at the circus, and people applaud, and then I raise up the back two legs and people think, wow, Simon's got feeble arms, but somehow he's really strong because he could stand on this horse. And then a third leg comes up, so I'm now standing on one leg, which people think is actually my arm, for the ones who've worked out there's not two people in there. But I'm not going to tell you this because it's giving away a secret, but the point is, you don't know which legs are which. I think I just did give away the secret.
That's marvellous. Can we go back to the table?
Yeah. And that's...
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. This one is my cow, and apparently her name is Muriel, and I think my friend Rosie Burke came up with that name, and she is a Frisian, and she has to be a Frisian because Frisians have white legs, and because I'm wearing white trousers, because I'm, you know, we do this in the middle of the Morris set. And the main difference between a cow and a horse is nothing, except this is essentially a horse, but it's got udders. And the udders are two pink washing up gloves. I don't know why there's two. Anyway, the fingers stuck out through some pink fabric, and inside is a balloon that I can inflate and deflate. And during a children's show, I discovered that actually you can do pelvic thrusts. If you can get up on your hind legs, do pelvic thrusts, and the balloon will bounce up and down. It's very funny. Rude. And so the pantomime, first of all, they wanted the cow, the horse, to do things. And so that's where the routine came from. And then they said, we need a cow for Jack and the Beanstalk. So normally Morris dancers would not go anywhere near a village panto. But actually the village panto, the tradition gave to the panto, and the panto gave back to the tradition. And so I now have a horse and a cow, but they never appear together.
And that's still happening?
Yeah, yeah. And they both, they have a stable, which is an early learning centre play tent that we can, because it's got to be collapsible and portable. And I get in there and the horse or cow struggles to get dressed and get out. Well, it's in there. I go in there, wake up the horse or cow, and it struggles to get out and rolls around a bit for a while and then does its show, which is might involve some circus skills and crossing legs and things. Because it's got four legs. So if you cross your legs, well, when you've crossed one leg over the other, you kind of run out of options. But a horse, if it sits on a chair and crosses its legs, you know, you can do a lot of stuff with that. Like Kenny Everett, apparently. I didn't know. Well, some of these ideas, I got this leg crossing routine and I thought, I've seen this somewhere, but I don't know where. But I've got this faint idea that I've seen it, and two people sitting side by side. So someone sits next to the horse and they cross their legs, and then the horse crosses its legs, and then everybody uncrosses, and the next time the horse puts his leg on the other person's knee, and then it gets on from there. And apparently that I've learned that Kenny Everett did something like that. So that maybe that's where it came from, subliminally.
Where would you like...
This is the frame from the first hobby horse. So you can see it has a cradle and it's made to measure. And the point was it had a skirt that hung over it, But if you spin in the style of, say, European Spanish dancers, it would flare out like 1950s full circle dress. And we made flags for it, which are in the same colours of burgundy, yellow. And if you spin it the right way, it will gradually unfurl. And the thing about flags is if you twirl them around, they wind up. So this flag has a hollow flag pole with a string attached at one end, then passing up through the hollow. And at the top, it doesn't matter which way you twist the pole, the string will adjust, it will just trail behind it, and the flag never gets snared up. And it hangs. So the four horses we had, the original four tourney horses, T-O-U-R-N-E-Y for the tournament, would do a flag waving dance, drawing on my circus background. And also we did a sword dance, because we're on horseback. I only had juggling knives, which are not real knives. And the team we used to dance with were very dismissive, and they said, "Oh, you're going to do the dance with the cake slices."
So something I'd love to ask you, and that is, where would you like to see this tradition go in the future?
We did this in Banbury, and it made sense because of Banbury Cross, but in a way Banbury wasn't the right town, because the population weren't the kind of people who were going to be interested. But Stratford-upon-Avon would be a wonderful place to do it, but I was burnt out by it. It was too exhausting, and I'm now 60. I'm nearly 62. I can't do that. If someone came along and said, "I'd like to do a gathering of hobby horses," I would like to see that happen. There is an organisation called the Illustrious Guild of Fools and Animals, and I am a member of that, but the hobby horses are very much on the periphery of that. And these animals are wonderful. Some of them are beautiful. They're fine pieces of craftsmanship. People have put a lot of passion and skill into making them. And some of them are really crude. Very few as crude as mine, but then few people are as crude as I am. And unsophisticated meaning. So Stratford would be a very good place to do it, because it has places you can perform, and you've got people who'd be receptive. And to be honest, you know, folk traditions mostly come from the working classes, but actually nowadays, if you want to revive something like this, this is contrived. There's money, but it also tends to be educated people or folkies who might not be educated particularly, but one or the other. But there's Stratford would be a better place to do it, because you've got people here who would be excited by the creative side of it, much more excited by it. You've got some theatrical people here, apparently. I've heard the local theatre company is very good. And I mean, you've got an art gallery up the road at Compton Verney that has a gallery devoted to naive art and folk art, and this would be one. You know, they've got this folk art, folk costume exhibition, but wouldn't it be wonderful to have an exhibition of hobby horses and other animals? Beasts of disguise is the term that I don't use. The term I use is the uncommon herd. There you are, you see, they've even got the title for the exhibition. Tie that in with an exhibition and performance. Wouldn't that be great? I'd love to see that, but already things have happened as a result of that festival. And at Sidmouth Festival, Steve, who came and built our Fine Lady horse and started the horse trials down there, the competition inspired by Banbury, his own work inspired by Banbury, he runs horse making workshops at the festival. People make a horse in a couple of days. It's very popular. And I went to see it. I didn't make an animal because there's a bit of a problem with them in my house. There's too many. And my wife would be a little bit concerned. Anyway, they had all the materials laid out, and it was at a school, and the children's boot rack was there. And I looked at the wellies and I thought, well, they look a little bit like a horse's head upside down. So I've only told you this, but I've got some wellies, and I they're heavy, but I want to turn them upside down. And you could put one boot on top of another, the left on top of the right maybe, or you could have two horses, one called Lefty and one called Righty, or you could make a stag and call it Staggers. And because you can cut the boot, I think, to make antlers flare out at the side. And so even though, oh yes, Banbury Hobby Horse, well, that's in the past, I've moved on from that. Actually, I want to make these this welly boot horse.
How has this impacted on your life overall?
Well, it put a strain on married life. Organising a festival, especially if it turns out years later you've got ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, you know, I am by definition not organised. So organising something was a bad thing to do. And the trouble with having a diagnosis is that I now know I can't do that. Whereas before I didn't know I couldn't do it, so I did it, but at a cost. And I've moved on to other things as well. I'm now a member of the Long Distance Walkers Association, and I do a 100-mile walk every year, and I make their videos, and that's swallowed me up instead. But it did take a toll, and when there was an illness in the family, I had to stop. My daughter, who will not like me saying that she is Mia Grundy in The Archers, carries on the tradition. She is a Morris dancer, a wonderful Morris dancer. And some dancers came over from America, and they went to Sheffield where she lives, and she danced a jig, and they said, "That's amazing. Who is she? She dances just like Simon Pipe." And I hadn't been to America for 15 years. So, you know, we are mavericks. There are some people in the folk tradition who don't fit, and every so often they come along. And everything I do, all of this horse inventing, my horse can do things I didn't invent. I discovered that it could do them. It showed me. But all of that comes from the fact that I am very neurodistinctive. And it's important, and I'm quite proud of it and pleased by it. But it does mean I've got lots of ideas in my head about lots of things, and it's better if I don't try and make it. But if I could persuade someone else to do it, that would be great.
Simon, I think that's absolutely marvellous. Thank you very much indeed for your time.